The White House has pledged that President Biden will not pardon his son on any of the federal charges he's facing. What are you hearing about that?
Well, his camp is not saying much about it, but my observation and analysis is that Hunter Biden has been acting like a person who may expect a pardon. Because, first of all, he walked away from that plea deal, which the judge raised questions about, but they were not able to reach a deal. This plea agreement would have called for no jail time. Now he's facing two felony indictments, and he still doesn't have the immunity that he was seeking in that plea deal. He's going on offense. You saw him make those public statements. That's not the behavior generally of a criminal defendant, but it's, you know, some people believe it could be the behavior of someone who never expects to see the inside of a prison cell, even if convicted on these very serious charges, Kristen.
Now, that last part, Ken Delanian, is true, but let's go back just a moment to the first part. It's not that the plea deal fell apart. It's that the judge asked a question that both, clearly the DOJ and the Hunter Biden lawyers never expected her to ask. If we strike a plea deal, does that mean charges against Hunter Biden can't come in the future? That was a very simple question. And the DOJ said, well, if there are charges in the future, there would be charges in the future. And that's when Hunter Biden's legal team went bat crap crazy. How dare you? This is for everything. We'll rip this up right now. What do you mean you'll rip this up right now? Nobody talks like that. That is insane. So yes, this is an observation that is of value from NBC News, that Hunter Biden does indeed act like a guy who never expects to see the inside of a courtroom. But that's because he still thinks he's under the protection of a sweetheart deal that never came to be, because a judge was smart enough to know that she was getting duped by Hunter Biden's lawyers and by the DOJ, because they would have let this thing go, let the judge sign off on it, and then they'd say, you know, we'd like to bring these other charges against Hunter, but we did this plea deal, and now we can't do it. Oh, well. And then everything would just move on like nothing had happened. When in the world of Hunter Biden, many, 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 many things have happened. Tony Katz today. So good to be with you. 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. And of course, all of this moves into the conversation regarding Joe Biden and the possibility of impeachment. And who's defending him? Eric Swalwell.
I see a good and decent man in Joe Biden who united the country, and all the evidence has shown that he loved his son. His son was on hard times, and he bought his son a truck, and his son paid him back. He loaned his brother money, and his brother paid him back. Joe Biden is just a decent American who fought MAGAism and is seeing them use this against him, and as I said, in this sick and perverse way.
If there's anybody who knows anything about sick or perverse, it's the guy who couldn't bring himself to bang a Chinese spy. I know what they say, that he was in flagrante delicto with the Chinese spy. What I'm saying is there's no way he actually did it. He's not man enough to do it. That's what I'm saying. Put it down. Write it down. Love for son is not a defense. He loves his son so much. So what? What does that matter? Not a defense. It's not even an argument. It's some ridiculous. If you really want to find a way to pull at the heartstrings of liberal white women, oh, that's the way to do it. But as we all know in America, liberal white women are the problem. Now, I know they hate hearing that, so allow me to say it again, just to make sure that we all understand each other here. It's extremely important that we're all on the same page when it comes to this. Liberal white women will buy into anything, absolutely anything, You see, you're secretly all racist, and you don't know it, and you have to admit to what terrible racist you are. Oh, yes, we're terrible racists. We'll actually spend money to attend dinners to be called racist, and then if we should ask a question, we'll realize that questioning is racism, and we will cry. But we're not allowed to cry because cries are tears, and tears are shields, so we just have to take it. Thank you, sir, may I have another. We're good liberal right white women. That's what we are. And this goes on in a million ways. You wanna actually try and win an election, get liberal white women to say, look, he just loves his son. Why is that a crime? Why don't more fathers love their sons like Joe Biden loves Hunter? Because sometimes love blinds somebody. That's why. Because love is not a defense. As it turns out, like we have said many times, love is not love, is not love, is not love, is not love. Sometimes it's all just a lie. Hunter Biden is a duplicitous dude, and Joe Biden knew plenty about Hunter Biden's activities. Now, I'm going to get more into this as we talk about the possibility of impeachment and where it goes down the line. The big story right now is that the Senate has delayed the holiday recess. This is about Ukraine and the border. Now, of course, we have been discussing border all this week. Border Week presented by Americans for Prosperity. I've got more interviews for you today. The multi-parts of the border. Concepts of the wall, concepts of technology, concepts of policy, concepts of labor. It's this never-ending piece. And not piece, these never-ending number of pieces that have to be put together in order to get a border policy that matters. But a border policy has to be of benefit to the United States first and foremost. No policy can exist that doesn't better strengthen the United States or secure the United States, which is another way of saying better strengthen, because a secure nation is a strong nation. It doesn't start with the need of the person coming across the border. It doesn't start with the need of Mexico. It doesn't start with the need of a Central American country. It doesn't start with the need of these ridiculous, terrible, lying NGOs, these non-governmental organizations that teach people to lie about asylum. Starts with the safety and security of the American citizenry. Then it moves into the growth and opportunity of America. The immigrant can then thrive and we can thrive. It cannot be they thrive and we suffer. That doesn't work. Now, you ask the political left, and they'll tell you that it does work because they don't move policies that don't involve that. Wait till you, I mean, and you've heard some of it this week, how impossible things are for people who have the job. For example, lettuce. Do you like lettuce? Do you like a salad? I'm not talking about kale. I'm talking about romaine, something you'd actually eat. If you want it picked, it isn't getting picked by Americans. When the conversation comes up about jobs Americans won't do, it is an honest conversation. And as it gets well explained, it isn't even so much about the physical labor. It's about where the lettuce farms are. Americans aren't moving to these border areas. But people who are coming into the country, migrants by nature, have more opportunities to go to more places. Less tied down by other spots, of course. So why do we make it so incredibly impossible for them to get jobs, and so incredibly impossible for Americans to get jobs? We make it so onerous that we seem to want to be able to push the idea that only somebody here illegally can have the job, which is an insanity. It doesn't make the country safer, and it doesn't create more prosperity. It's nonsense. But why is it now we're at the best last chance to get this legislation done? That's what Schumer said. Democrats want to get billions of dollars in aid for Ukraine. Ain't going to happen without a border. Schumer saying to my Republican colleagues who have said action on the border is urgent, let's keep working to find a solution instead of rushing for the exits. If Republicans are serious about getting something done, they should not be so eager to go home. This may be our last best chance to get this legislation done. First of all, I don't know why it would be a last best chance, but I don't care if members of the Senate go home for Christmas. For the record, I'm in Indiana. My senators are Todd Young and Mike Braun. Nice enough guys. But I don't care if they go home for Christmas. It means zero to me if they're with their families for Christmas. They asked for this job. They ran around the state. They spent a whole bunch of money, whole bunch of promises. So if this is what it takes in order for us to actually get some movement on the border, you stay in D.C. I don't know. Get takeout. Chinese food on Christmas, delicious. I recommend the spring rolls. But I have no idea what Schumer thinks he's going to do. What is he going to offer up? If you do not start with, we will end the radical asylum rules that we have right now. We will change those rules, remove the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, and demand absolute transparency. And the people who claim asylum, who are not asylum seekers, will never be allowed into the country again. I mean, I'm a guy who has got some pretty strong thoughts on this. Is Schumer going to go along with that? I don't know. But as a matter of just a weird place of agreement that you might have with Chuck Schumer, no matter how much that freaks you out, I don't care if the Senate goes home. I don't care if the House goes home. That is not my problem. You're the one who wanted to be called congressman. You're the one who wanted to be called senator. You're the one who wanted to wear the fancy pin and get the good parking spot. Okay, you got it. Now you work until the job is done. As a matter of fact, none of you can go home until we have a secure border. How about that? If you haven't figured out how to secure the border through some at least starter policies, how about when you're not there doing the work in the Senate, we send you down to the border to work with Border Patrol, because then at least you'd be earning your keep. Because you sure as hell aren't doing it now. No idea. No idea. And the recommendations are coming from absolutely everywhere, including Representative Henry Cuellar, who has been very, very strong on this subject. He's been very much so as a Democrat out of Texas, one of the very few who has been clear-minded about the border itself, saying that why doesn't Joe Biden just copy Barack Obama?
Well, look, I respect my colleagues. They certainly have a different opinion. But some of us have been talking about this since 2013. You know, you talk to some of us on the border, we think a little differently. I don't have any sanctuary cities. I don't have any public officials that say, let them in, let them in. We've been dealing with this migrant situation for so many years. Now that New York, now that Chicago, Washington, D.C., Colorado, Massachusetts, and other places are feeling what we felt, this is what we've been talking about. This, I don't call this a Republican idea, because some of us pushed this idea before some of those Republicans were even in office. We just want to see one thing at the border. We want to see law and order. We don't want to see chaos at the border. But at the same time, we want to respect the migrants' rights and their claim to asylum. But again, the law is very clear. Persecution by a state. By a state based on five things, and most of those folks do not qualify. They do not qualify.
Do you think it's important, sir, to have Latino representation in these talks?
Well, you know, Secretary Mayorkas is certainly involved in the talks. I have talked to some of the folks about it. In fact, some of the ideas that they're looking at are ideas that I've talked about it. Certainly, the Senate should have Latinos, but it's not only Latinos that should be involved. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, we want to make sure that the migrant rights, because right now, migrants are not coming only from Latin America. They're coming in from from 50 plus countries across the world.
We have about 30 seconds left, and I want to get you on the record with this, and that is the launch of this impeachment inquiry into the
I don't need to know about the impeachment inquiry. But he's right about the sanctuary cities. All these progressives who have screamed sanctuary cities, and they were going to show you how good they were. I mean, it's liberal white women all over again. You want to talk about the problem? Let me be clear. We can't just throw these people out. We need to be a sanctuary city that's welcoming to everybody. That'll really show those terrible Republicans how to be good people. And liberal white women said, that's exactly what we should do. We should open up our city and our hearts. And then they opened up the city. And the people said, well, wait. Now the city's so dangerous. And then the city said, stop being racist. And the liberal white women said, you're right, we're racist, even though our kids are now under threat. We're so sorry that we're racist. We can't help it. It's just who we are deep inside. Have I made it perfectly clear what I think about liberal white women? Is it too on the nose? Is that what's happening? Am I just hitting it too directly, just one after another? Has the nail been driven directly through the board by this stage? These sanctuary cities thought they were so decent and so smug, and then they had to deal with the reality. How dare you bust these people around? I actually got told, so you're just in favor of busing people like they put Jews in trains in Nazi Germany. The Jews in Germany didn't cross a border to get there. The border crossed them. That's number one. And number two, God, that's twisted. And number three, now New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles and Martha's Vineyard have all learned. DC has learned. The border is an American issue. And America has to fix it. I'm Tony Katz. Did McCarthy have an altercation with Gates, or did he just call him psychotic? Oh, he didn't say it to his face. Because this was basically Kevin McCarthy's last day. These were the last votes. There won't be any more votes. He's resigning at the end of the year. So he's done his last work in Congress. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. And of course he... Oh, it's also bittersweet, and he gave his final thoughts on this and that and the other. But referring to Matt Gaetz as psychotic and the Federal Bureau of Investigation studies minds like his. Oh, people study that type of crazy mind, right? Mainly the FBI. I don't know. Gaetz won? I still haven't figured out what it is that got won through removing McCarthy. I don't. McCarthy telling Politico late November, you have a cross section of the delegation, you have Gaetz who belongs in jail, and you have serious members. Oh, okay. It is very obvious that there is an extent to which McCarthy had outstayed the welcome. The people were just not down with his style. There is, without question, the fact that Gaetz remains, and people do see him as a fighter. I'm just saying this whole maneuver on Speaker, I don't think got us anywhere. And even the conversation about the NDA, the National Defense Authorization Act, is it really that much stronger than what McCarthy could have done? You still have an extension of Section 702. You still didn't have the abortion requirements, removed in terms of what it is that the defense world will spend for people's abortion. So what actually changed here? Now, I have that conversation with Congressman Jim Banks. I'll bring that to you in a bit because he sits on Armed Services in the House of Representatives. As for who replaces McCarthy and how that special election process works, I'm not 100% sure. What I know is Republicans have basically no majority now and no room for error. That is not fun. Oh, in a re-election, where very possibly they can lose the House. I didn't say they will. I just said it's possible. I'm Tony Katz. So the talk has been about Harvard and MIT and University of Pennsylvania and being in front of this congressional committee and Congresswoman Elise Stefanik asking the question. You know, you have students chanting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They're calling for genocide of Jews. Does this run afoul of your rules there on campus? And these college presidents, with smiles on their faces, said, well, it depends on the context. Genocide depends on the context? Every day on a college campus, it seems, you've got a mini Charlottesville going on. Remember Charlottesville, Jews will not replace us? And my commentary was, I'll speak on behalf of the Jews, we don't want to replace you, we're doctors. The last thing we want to do is wear those khakis and live in our mom's basement. Tony Katz today, it's good to be with you. But the argument was they were talking about replacement theory, and this was anti-Semitism at its worst. But we're seeing it on colleges, on college campuses, and in downtowns all across America daily, and nothing gets said. As a matter of fact, Liz McGill loses her job at University of Pennsylvania, but Claudine Gay, the president of Harvard, she gets protected even when it is clear she is guilty of plagiarism, which Christopher Rufo and others have done a very fine job of exposing and just putting the side-by-side data out there. But there are other things happening, like at Butler University in Indianapolis. Butler University, which is a private university, actually engaged an investigation into the school's college Republicans because the college Republicans condemned a group called Students for Justice in Palestine for holding these anti-Israel protests, this just days after the October 7th attack from Hamas, a terrorist organization, where they murdered and raped and beheaded 1,200 plus Israelis and others, including children. And for questioning what it is that this group, Students for Justice in Palestine, has done, there's now this conversation happening at Butler that the Republicans, the college Republicans, have overstepped, and they're now in the hot seat. Tony Kinnett has been reporting on this, investigative columnist with the Daily Signal and a radio host at my home station, 93.1 FM WIBC in Indianapolis. You hear him nightly, 7 to 8 p.m. Your job, Tony, is to find the stories, and when you're in your world, the stories come to you. How did this story from Butler University come to you?
So I first heard about this protest that had been scheduled because it was days after the Hamas attack into Israel. There had been no retaliation from Israel, just the Hamas invasion and the harm of civilians, harm putting it lightly. And this huge day of jihad was coming up, and so there was going to be this protest in Indianapolis. So I covered it live for the Daily Signal and WIBC, walked around with my camera, filmed several hours of footage to kind of see what was going on, and then for the next couple of weeks, kind of nothing. And I get a message from the president of the College Republicans, a young man named Aiden Kunke, and he asked me if I had a few moments, and he said they were under a official investigation by the Title IX coordinator at Butler because they had put out a letter on Instagram condemning Students for Justice in Palestine, which sponsored and hosted the event, and said that the university should abide by its non-discrimination policy. They said they were being investigated, this being the College Republicans, for inciting harassment and violence towards Muslim and Palestinian students.
Now,
and it had been going on at that point for 5 weeks.
Let's now take just a quick step back. This group, Students for Justice in Palestine. As you have noted, this is a group that's been suspended from other campuses, including Rutgers campus, Rutgers University. I don't always know if I agree with those kinds of maneuvers, but there's no doubt that Students for Justice in Palestine, which I've talked about before, a leftist organization, a socialist organization, and very clearly, and your research bears this out, an anti-Israel, anti-Jewish organization.
Yes, the things that were chanted by that protest setting, the protesters at that rally, are deeply anti-Semitic. From the river to the sea, that ethnic chant. And also, in my opinion, the far more disturbing, not a victim, not a crime chant, saying that Israel actually wasn't a victim, so therefore the Hamas terrorists were not actually committing a crime. And they actually claim that the GOP group at Butler was lying when they accused the protesters of saying that. But I have the footage of them chanting that. That's why Aiden originally contacted me.
And so this Republican group then posts a letter saying this is wrong. That's what they said. This is wrong. Do you have was there anything that you read within the letter itself that could be construed as somehow threatening, or was it just the exposing of what happened, Tony?
In my opinion, you can read the letter for yourself up at the Daily Signal. In my article, we post the full letter that was up on Instagram. The article condemned the actions as anti-Semitic. It accused the members of the Students for Justice in Palestine organization as celebrating the deaths of Israelis by chanting, not a victim, not a crime. And then said the university should act according to its non-discrimination policy. To me, that's the opposite of incitement. If I ask the authority organization to act according to their laws, if I ask, you know, someone to investigate and then carry out according to policies, that's the opposite of vigilantism and incitement. I'm asking for calm, respectful investigation to be done.
As you write, talking to Tony Kinnett, he is an investigative columnist for the Daily Signal, a radio host at 93.1 FM WIBC in Indianapolis. The college Republicans called for Butler University, to follow the non-discrimination policies you're discussing of its own Office of Student Activities. But you're saying that the person who runs the Title IX side of things turned this back on the Republicans. First, what is the Title IX coordinator? What is their job? And what did the Republicans specifically hear from this coordinator at Butler University?
The Title IX coordinator currently at Butler University, her name is Azure Swinford. She was just hired on in August of 2023. She used to work at Indianapolis Public Schools in their Title IX office. Title IX is gender-related discrimination law. Title VI would be more racial discrimination law, which is what Butler is alleging here. But according to emails that we received, Swinford received complaints from the pro-Palestinian students and then filed basically a request for investigation. And then Butler appointed her, the lady who filed the petition for investigation, to investigate the situation. But by that time, again, according to the emails that she sent, she had clearly decided the college Republicans were guilty because she told them, take down your Instagram post, and I quote, don't post anything else that incites, end quote. So by that quote alone, she's already told them that she thinks that they're guilty. And then the next 5 weeks were silent. She said they could be disbanded. Maybe the university would give them a warning. Results are still pending.
So the Butler Republican Club, as they see it and you report it, in looking into this, they were threatened by Butler University and by Swinford, who runs this Title IX office.
Absolutely. I believe, especially given the status of a lot of students kind of getting ready to graduate, that the organization was, again, told that they could be disbanded. I do believe that this constitutes being threatened into silence. And that's unacceptable of any organization anywhere.
You note that the Daily Signal, and I'm quoting here, has not been able to find any document indicating that Butler University is investigating the behavior or activity of Students for Justice in Palestine during this rally. The rally that you're referring to, and groups like this, Students for Justice in Palestine, then there's, you know, Jewish Voice for Peace. This is all reminiscent of Monty Python. It's the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front, and it all gets rather confusing. This event from this group, Students for Justice in Palestine, this anti-Israel group, and that's me saying it, this didn't happen on the Butler campus. Does that change the dynamic of how Butler responds to it?
According to the non-discrimination policy in the student handbook, students are students at Butler, whether they are on campus or not on campus. That's the agreement signed with student organizations and with students between Butler when they go to the university. And because of that, everyone has to play by the same rules. So that means if we're going to investigate Republicans for what they say on or off campus and whether that aligns with the non-discrimination policy, one would expect that the Students for Justice in Palestine would be held up to the same standards. But in this situation, that does not appear to be the case.
The Butler University Republican Club there. You're saying that it's been weeks that they haven't heard anything from the university since this, or has there been more conversations of, if you do this, if you say that, if you have an event here, you will be held responsible and possibly expelled, etc.? Have they been warned in any way? Have there been explicit threats of being removed from the campus, removed from the student body?
So Azure Swinford has met with the college Republican president and then the upcoming president for the next term a couple of times, but no update that I have been told of on any situation regarding where the investigation is at has been given. There is no indication as to where this investigation is currently, how this investigation was conducted. In fact, the two young men had a meeting with Swinford in which she stated, it made it sound like the investigation was complete, but maybe it wasn't complete. They're completely in the dark in this situation. And over such a simple claim, this should have been investigated open and shut in a week. Did the Palestinian students, or the pro-Palestinian protesters, I should say, did they make this chant or didn't they? Because that's what you're condemning. That's all they had to do.
Now,
and
you have...
It's taken over 6 weeks to answer it.
You have video of this. You saw this happen. In that video, you are saying that some of the things chanted were long live Palestine, which would be a questionable thing. What does that actually mean? Not a victim, not a crime, not a nickel, not a dime, no more room, you say it says, for Israel's crimes. Now, you're saying the not a victim, not a crime. Is that to the idea that Israel is not a victim, they deserve what they get? Or is that to the idea, as we have heard from others on other campuses and other places? We heard this, for example, in Oakland in one of their town hall kind of meetings. No one from Israel was killed by Hamas. That was all the IDF and that propaganda that somehow Israelis killed their own people.
I've heard both, but at the time when that chant was chanted, I had not seen on social media or abroad anyone saying that Israel had done this to their own citizens. At that time, the justification on social media, because remember, at this time, Hamas was still openly bragging with social media and GoPro videos of what they were doing. So it was at that point difficult to suggest it was all a big psyop. So instead, at that moment, I believe, based on the context that was going on around social media, that it was justifying the actions of Hamas. And the evidence for this is footage from the RT, that Russian channel that has a lot of Hamas individuals on, Al Jazeera, that were making these claims at that moment in time.
You have a quote from Jay Green, senior research fellow in the Heritage Foundation's Center for Education Policy, and Daily Signal is part of a Heritage Foundation. And he states, and I'm quoting, launching a harassment investigation against an organization for objecting to harassment by another group has a chilling effect. If this were done to groups expressing concerns about police abuse or sexual misconduct, everyone would recognize how inappropriate it was. But because it was done by Republicans expressing concerns for Jews, Butler sees no problem. Is the point of this expose, as you're doing this reporting, to try and is the result to try and get Butler to recognize that they're engaging in their own harassment of students? Is this to just show that these double standards, like Mr. Green is discussing here, are happening everywhere and with impunity? What would you like to see the result of your reporting be?
The first and primary result of this reporting is that because Azure Swinford is the Title IX coordinator, which is a federally funded position even at a private university, I believe that there are questions regarding the ethicality of this investigation. And I think that if federal funding is being used unethically, I think that there should be a federal investigation into how Butler is allowing students to be investigated using federal money. That would be the first and foremost thing. But number two is, yes, as you mentioned, I'd like to bring awareness to the intense double standard here, which is that you're right. This would be insane. Imagine someone was sexually assaulted. They called for an investigation and they themselves were investigated. It would be insane. It would be just beyond foolishness. But this is the standard that a lot of these DEI offices have set. I mean, Swinford is the associate director or the assistant director of institutional equity. And this is how these organizations function. Some groups are protected, some groups aren't. And that determines who receives justice and who doesn't.
Tony Kinnett, investigative columnist for the Daily Signal, weeknights, 7 p.m. on 93.1 FM WIBC in Indianapolis. You find him on the X Twitter at TheTonus, TheTonus. Tony Kinnett, always appreciated. I've got more to get to. I'm Tony Katz, and this is Tony Katz Today. It is true that every time I hear the whole Students for Justice in Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, the only thing that goes through my head every single time is this, Life of Brian, Monty Python.
Are you the Judean People's Front?
F*** off.
What?
Judean People's Front.
Well, the People's Front of Judea. The only people we ate more than the Romans are the in Judean People's Front.
Yes.
And the Judean Popular People's Front.
Oh, yes.
And the People's Front of Judea.
Yes. Splitters.
What? The People's Front of Judea. Splitters.
We're the People's Front of Judea.
Oh, I thought we were the Popular Front.
People's Front. Whatever happened to the Popular Front?
He's over there.
Splitter!
I mean, these guys were freaking soothsayers. Way ahead of their time. Tony Katz Today. What I think might be for us more of a serious topic on this is there's a lot of people out there willing to support terrorists because they're not supporting Palestine. They're supporting Hamas. And they can't do the division anymore. They can't say, no, we're supporting the people of Gaza. No. You support Hamas. That's what you support. You support terrorists and you support the destruction of a nation and of a people. That's what you support. I'm not letting them off the hook. Splitters. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today.